Tony is not here this week, which means that it is my turn to do Book of Mormon Radio. My name is Eric Stevens, and I'll be your host. This week we will be studying 2 Nephi chapters 12, 13, and 14.
2 Nephi chapter 12. For chapter 12 and for the next 10 chapters, though, we'll be talking about the prophecies of Isaiah. In the beginning of this chapter, it's talking about the millennium. It does that as a motivation to the people who hear the Lord so that they will know what to expect. It's also meant as a, in this case, that he's talking to the scattered Israel, that they put their eye on this motivation or on the millennium and get back to that being their goal and that be where they'd like to be. And so that's why he talks about it for these first several verses. And in them, in these verses, he says that during the millennium, the Lord will be known throughout the world, and he'll live in the mountaintops in Zion, and people will come throughout the world to get his wisdom and learn what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to walk. Well, isn't that's exactly what we're supposed to be doing today. And we have that opportunity to do that today. And the difference between now and the millennial world is everybody recognizes that, obvious, and everybody goes to the Lord to find out what they're supposed to do and what path they're supposed to walk in. Again, we should be walking it. We have the opportunity. We should be walking the path he had laid out for us today. Notice that there is repentance and progression and a conversion and study and personal growth during the millennium. It's completely under the direction of the Lord, and that's what we should look forward to. But it's not just then. We can have that now. If we have pure faith, we can be one with the Lord, and he'll give us all those things now. So in verse 5, in Isaiah, he's calling to the scattered Israel to listen to the Lord and that they have gone astray. And again, that's why the gospel was given to the Gentiles. That's why the Book of Mormon came from the Gentiles, because Israel would not listen to the Lord. Israel just wouldn't do it at the time, and so it had to be given to the Gentiles, and some of the Gentiles would listen, and there was enough of a framework there to send the Book of Mormon out in hopes of getting it to Israel. He condemns scattered Israel, and he says what their problem is, and again, this is not just to look at scattered Israel. It tells them what their problems are and tells you what the problems are today. Obviously, the millennium has not came. We have not progressed as Joseph Smith said we should and as the Book of Mormon says we should. So obviously, all these condemnations of them apply to us today. And he says that we would rather hear the predictions of men and what men have to say and what they think is going to happen. And no matter who you are, whether you believe in talking about the destruction of the last days, talk about what's going on in the world. You'd rather find out what's going on in the economy by reading the Wall Street Journal. You want to hear it. You listen to the news to find out what's going on in the world. And you listen to men, and you listen to each other's predictions. And this is what's important to you. And just instead of just going to the Lord and finding out what the Lord wants you to do, irrespective of what's going to happen in this world, that you're interested in all those things, and rather have a good relationship with your wife. You'd rather watch television and watch movies where you can sit there and cast your eyes and lust upon people who are complete strangers, and even down to then finally you take greater pleasure in going out and committing whoredom rather than creating a relationship with a good wife. Whether you do it or don't, your thoughts are that there'd be greater pleasure in a whoredom with someone else than you could have with your own wife. It says in 7 and 8 that the land is full of precious things, of cars and things that are manufactured, and this is what the people worship. This is what the people are going for. Why did he say to worship? That's what you want out of life. What are you supposed to have in life? What you want out of life is to prepare yourself to go back to God and live with him for eternity. You recognize this life is only a preparatory ground for your next life. But instead, you're focused on this life and what you can get out of it and everything there is here. And the last thing you're thinking about is your next life and preparing for that. And that is the problem. And in 9, he's talking about how the people are so proud. They're driving around in a car with proud that they have this car, and they show up their nice house, and they show up how good they're doing in business, and they love to talk about their church titles and the positions they have in companies, and everything is based on being proud, and you should be proud, and this is how the people act. They're more concerned with making themselves lofty or putting themselves up than they are at humbling themselves before the Lord. And in 10 and 11 it said it would be be better that you hid. It would be better that you go hide when the Lord comes, because when the Lord comes, he's not going to think you're proud, and he's the one he's the only one that has glory and that should be held up, and when he comes, he'll smite you down. He's not going to uphold your pride. It doesn't matter if your pride's in being a great member of the church, or that throughout the ages, members of the church have thought that they're a chosen people, and somehow they became proud in being this chosen people, and they thought that when the Lord came, he's going to uphold them and say, yay, these are my chosen people. And he's letting you know that he doesn't like that kind of loftiness, and he wants you to humble himself to you, and either you humble yourself to him now, or when he comes, he's going to, he'll humble you then. But you will be made humble. And in verses 12 through 16, it lets you know, and this is a comfort to those who follow the Lord, that the Lord's going to come unto all of the earth, and everyone on the earth is going to know about the Lord. And you cannot shut this out. I mean, you think in your life, well, I don't have to worry about the Lord in this instance, and when I'm over at my factory, the Lord's not really there, you know. Well, everywhere you think you've shut the Lord out in your life now, when he comes, he's going to be there. And so you can't shut the Lord out. And if you're wise and you're prepared to meet the Lord, then the Lord's with you everywhere where you're at. And you don't have in your mind these places where the Lord is not. Because when he comes, he is everywhere. And if you have places where you thought he is not, you'll wish that you had had him there. Because at that point, that's probably where you're going to be when he comes. And then you're going to wish you could go hide from him because you didn't have him there and you weren't prepared to receive him. Because when he comes, if you are not in the state of having him, filling him in the Spirit, you will not be prepared when he does come. In verse 17, man is proud of his world. He says, look at this wonderful world. Look at all the accomplishments I have. And look how hard I work. And I work down at the potato factory. We produce enough potatoes to feed the whole world. You know, notice they're proud of how they what they produce. They think nothing about just having to do anything with the Lord. They think they accomplished it. They think they did it. They're pumped. Everyone is proud of what they are doing in this world, and they're proud of their accomplishments. The important thing here is we think of all those that cheat and steal and that and think that it's them that are having the problem. They have their own ways of seeing pride. Anyone that is proud in anything, the Lord is going to humble them down until you recognize that everything you receive in this life is from the Lord. Again, your desire is to serve the Lord. He is your provider, and you have no right to usurp his power and authority and claim that you provide for everyone, and you're the one that's causing everyone to eat or be taken care of, and that you're in the military, and you're a good guy, and you're protecting everyone. And you're the leader of the church, and look how well you're doing taking care of him and progressing these things. In every case, we continue to run around in our pride that we can do we are doing the Lord's work, I repeat over and over again. We keep thinking it's us that is doing one of those three things for this world, and we don't want to recognize and look to the Lord and create a society where everyone looks to the Lord for all three of these things. When the Lord comes, he will destroy all of your works. And you'll see how fast your works are gone. And then when you don't have your factories and you don't have your crops and so forth, then how are you going to be provided for? And how are you providing for others? And when he demolishes all your equipment, how then are you going to defend and protect him? And when the armies are wiped off the world and you're out by your own, how then are you going to be protected? And he'll wipe out everything that you have, and he'll destroy the church buildings. And then when you don't have your church down the road, have you created a relationship with the Lord so that you're not dependent on that church down the street? In every case, you have replaced the Lord with something else. And when he comes, he'll destroy those things. And then you're not ready for him, and you'll wish that you could hide. You'll do the best you can to hide, but in your mind you think that you're lofty, and you think that you're going to be praised by God, and that when he comes, he's gonna say, oh, look at how well you've made the church grow, and oh, look how much you help your fellow man, and you think that you're going to be praised and lifted up by him. But that's not his program. His program is not what you're doing for your fellow man. It's how you come unto him and how you serve him. And then when you are asked by him to do something for your fellow man, you know clearly in your mind that you've been clearly asked by the Spirit to do it by the Lord. And therefore, all credit is to him. All you're doing is following his plan, and that he has prepared the way. And you understand in every single aspect that it is of the Lord, it is not of you. And again, when we say the normal case today, when we even claim to be doing the Lord's work, we have not received the clear specification for him that that is his work. And we have that connotation in our mind that it is us. I repeat, that it's we are doing the Lord's work, and so therefore we think that we are going to be upheld for that instead of understanding that the more true aspect, that all we are is a servant of the Lord following his direction, and that all glory goes to him because as we did his work, he already paid us for doing that work. And so, therefore, it is exactly the same as if I pay a young man to go over there and mow your lawn. Do you thank the young man or do you thank me? And we have been paid by the Lord, so we have no right to think that we receive any credit for what we have done. That would be much like the young man then going and asking to be paid a second time from the people he did the work for. When you read Isaiah, it should touch your spirit and it should stir up these kind of feelings within inside you so that you can best understand and understand your true feelings. This is why the words of Isaiah are so important, and because they help us get in touch with those feelings on where we've gone astray and why the Lord is upset with us or what the Lord expects us to do. And again, my commentary is not meant to be exact translation of these things, but I do believe that by the Spirit, these words do inspire those kind of thoughts.